This podcast is brought to you by Learn Prime. Start your journey to becoming a great developer at learn.thoughtbot.com.
I need to warm up my vocal cords a little bit.
Open pit barbecue sauce.
Perfect.
All right, we're good.
Hey, everybody. This is Gordon in Boston.
And this is Mark in San Francisco.
And this is Build Phase. We actually have our first guest on the podcast. We're joined by Matt Thompson, who's the mobile lead at Heroku. He's also probably best known for being the creator and maintainer of AF Networking, along with essentially half of the other open source projects in Objective-C on GitHub, Helios and Nomad, Postgres. And then writes for and runs NS Hipster, which is we've talked about a few times and is an awesome resource for developers at all levels, I think. So how's it going, Matt?
Hey, not too bad. Thanks so much for having me on the program.
Yeah, our pleasure.
Yeah. How is everything over there in Boston? Weather going all right? Start of fall?
Yeah.
The leaves are changing?
Yeah, it's actually been super hot.
Ooh.
Really weird. It was snowing this time, like a couple years ago.
Yeah, don't I know it? I was a Pittsburgh native, so that, you know, that whole thing of seasons not acting, you know, not behaving themselves and just generally being schizophrenic, definitely. Something I miss, maybe? I don't know.
So, what exactly is a mobile lead at Heroku do?
That is a very good question. That's something that I've been sort of figuring out myself over the last 2 years. I joined Heroku at the beginning of 2012, so coming up on my my third year at Heroku. And being a mobile lead at Heroku is interesting, right? So Heroku, of course, is the easiest way to get your app up and running on the internet. It allows you to scale that app effortlessly as you hit traffic, and it gives you a really agile deployment method. Of course, none of that has to do with mobile because you know you're running mobile apps on your phone. However, mobile apps increasingly are cloud apps. They're connecting to these backend services that provide JSON APIs, for instance. So increasingly, your phone is more and more useless if you don't have the internet. So mobile applications can use services like Heroku to really drive their applications. So in what I do day to day, it's trying to figure out how best to allow people to develop great mobile apps built on Heroku. And a lot of that has to do with open source development. A lot of that has to do with talking to business partners and add-on providers to give them the best value, to give developers the best value on Heroku, and just document the process too. So it's a little bit of developer evangelism, open source work, some business, and documentation. So it's really a lot of hats to wear, but it's a really interesting job, and I've really enjoyed it.
That's cool. Was there someone doing that at Heroku before you got there?
Oh, no. I was hired specifically for that. So when I came down to interview, that was the end of 2011, they were specifically looking for somebody to kind of take this whole mobile thing, which was, back then it was still emerging. Right now at this point, it's almost old news. It's become a cliche that mobile's the new thing. But, 2 years ago, that was still sort of a nuance. There's still nuance to be discovered, and they brought me on to kind of flesh that out. I, of course, applied. I wanted to make the Heroku app. I was interested and delighted by Heroku's aesthetic and thought there could be a really good experience made on that. But as I joined and as I spent time there, I realized that there's a lot more impact to be had in creating great resources to enable mobile developers. So, my work at Heroku hasn't been making apps per se, but helping other people make apps.
I feel like most of Helios and Nomad, those are largely Ruby, right? And then is Helios mostly Ruby on the back end?
Yeah, it's all written in Ruby.
Okay, so I guess you do, if networking, that's Objective-C. How much work do you do in Postgres still? Postgres.app, that is.
Postgres.app was, for anybody that's not as familiar, it's the easiest way to get up and running with PostgreSQL, the the best free database out there. It's a relational database, but it also, with recent updates, has a lot of great NoSQL-like features, such as HStore, which allows you to do arbitrary key value stores in a column in a native JSON type, as well as a number of features, really amazing things that you only get out of like a 20-year project like Postgres. So it's a great project, but it was really, really hard to install. So Postgres.app, it's a simple thing. You download it, you double-click it on the Mac, you open it up, and all of a sudden you have Postgres running. So that's a project that I started right around the time where I joined Heroku to solve that problem. And since then, it's been transitioned off to a couple other maintainers and contributors. But so I'm not working on that as actively right now. But certainly any project that I create, I'm using Postgres as the database because that's just the best thing out there.
So the other kind of database related thing that you've done is Induction. Are you still working on that at all, or is that kind of...
Induction's in an interesting place right now. Mac development, if you haven't done much of that, is quite a different world from iOS. It's challenging in that it doesn't work a lot of the time, at least as you would expect. It's a very old set of APIs, unlike UIKit, which is sort of, even 6 years on, still quite impressive and virile, if that's the right word. But yeah, AppKit is sort of a nightmare in a lot of ways, so I wasn't as prepared for that. And as far as a first app, I think a polyglot database client is for anybody, pretty darn ambitious. So that's something that I wish I had more time to work on, but there are more pressing matters. So hopefully I can revisit that project in the near future. But I think the value proposition of that is still pretty universal, even since I started working on it. It's the idea that you can access data irrespective of what format it's in and what protocol it requires you to communicate over. I started it off as a Redis client because I was really interested in creating a GUI experience for Redis. But of course, being at Heroku, Postgres is the flavor of the month every month. So they encouraged me to open that up to Postgres. And of course, people ask for MySQL. And certainly it just kind of grows from there to Mongo and to other data stores like that. But the insight that I came to in really looking at the problem is that there are things that are databases that we don't think of as databases. I mean, comma separated value flat files. Those are something that people use probably just as frequently as databases to store very important information. Excel files the same way. So giving this mission to kind of create a universal interface that can open all these things at once and just give you a powerful way to explore, query, and visualize that information. That was the central value prop of Induction. However, of course, that is incredibly ambitious, and as a side project, is something that I'm only dedicating maybe a fraction of every other weekend to.
Right.
That's going to be kind of difficult. So right now, yeah, taking a back seat, but hope to revisit it sometime.
Yeah, it seems massive. Just in scope and everything.
Oh, absolutely. But fortunately, the modules are relatively self-contained. Mm-hmm. So each piece, each plugin, I mean, the engine, and for anybody that's aspiring to work on this kind of problem, I'm curious to hear any input on kind of the structure that I set up as far as protocols. So in abstracting the problem out so much that it can accommodate both the database and, for instance, a web API, let's say you have an adapter for Twitter, for a Twitter public stream or your own feed, that it can accommodate all these cases, you kind of have to speak in kind of broad terms. So the interface, the set of protocols that I defined that's shared by all these different modules is interesting. Maybe worth a look if anybody's interested in that.
So Matt, AF Networking 2 was released last week, I believe, 2 weeks ago?
Sure, yeah. Actually, totally lost track of time.
Recently, yes.
Recently, released, yeah. Let's call it that.
Released recently. I was wondering if you could go into some detail about AF Networking 2 and what specifically it adds over just using NSURL session, which is new in iOS 7, and maybe just give us the quick pitch, and then we'll dive in from there.
Absolutely. Well, I'll start with a kind of a short story first. So, kind of rewind back to WWDC you know, I'm sitting in that what's new in foundation networking session, session 705. And this is, as an API author, kind of a make or break moment, right? There, every year, I think a lot of open source developers and application developers as well kind of go to WWDC with an expectation, maybe a dread, that at some point Apple's going to make something that totally obviates what they've spent their time creating, right? The effect of being Sherlocked. I've had that happen on a couple of projects, thankfully, you know, with their addition of like NS attributed string to their label class, which made my made a project that I made totally unnecessary. Like that's great when that happens. But with AF networking, you know, that's sort of a project that's close to my heart. So I wanted to, you know, I came in dreading that maybe there wouldn't be a need for that anymore. And again, that would be great if the standard library could accommodate those cases better than, you know, a third party library could. But of course, what I found was that NS URL session, the new additions to the networking infrastructure in iOS 7 and Mac OS 10 Mavericks, is a refactoring and an upgrade of NS URL connection. But there's still a lot of opportunity to wrap some high-level abstractions on top of that in the way that AF networking does or did previously with its 1.0 release. So the high-level pitch is that it's the same value proposition of AF networking. It's that it's a high-level abstraction on top of the solid networking infrastructure that Foundation provides, but geared for application developers. So instead of talking about HTTP as sort of the top level thing, AF networking goes to the extent of talking about resources and talking about data types and the transfer of information between your application and a server. So that's sort of the high level overview of AF networking too, and I'm happy to say that it accomplished you know, all those goals, and I think it's even better than ever.
That's great. So did you start on this right after WWDC?
Pretty much within an hour of watching that session, I just sort of dived in. I dove into the API docs. Look, I mean, they didn't have any documentation at the time, so I was basically working from what I'd just, you know, the frantic notes that I took during the session, and then any of the API diffs, kind of crawling around the headers, looking for some clues on how everything fit together. Actually, within, you know, about 2 hours of doing that, I had maybe the first prototype of what AF Networking 2 was going to be based on NS URL session. But of course, that process, you know, 3 months later, that was a lot of refinement to understand how exactly to reconcile NS URL session and NS URL connection. Because remember, NS URL connection isn't deprecated yet. It's something that's sort of a doomed API, but it's still in use and it still has its value. So how to reconcile a lot of different things. So the technical merits of this new technology, how to best transition this open source project to the new version, how to take care of developers who are already developing an AF Networking 1 to make that experience good and not suck. So there are a lot of concerns there aside from, you know, technically getting it to work. Again, that was sort of a long process, but it started, yeah, immediately after that session.
It looks like a very impressive feat, considering you had about 100 days since WWDC to put this together, you and your contributors, of course.
Well, yeah, of course. I had a lot of help there, and again, a shout-out to all those contributors who really, you know, without them, it wouldn't be possible. This whole project has been an amazing opportunity to collaborate with people, over 130 people around the world. And as I, you know, have the opportunity to travel and meet some of these people, it's really reminds me of the strength of the open source community. It's something that Objective-C didn't have really until quite recently. So it's been an amazing experience overall.
I believe during WW you referred to this as the third wave of Objective-C.
Yeah, that's the phrase I coined. Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure if it means anything or if it's a useful distinction, but I sort of divided up the history of Objective-C development into three different phases. You have the old Next Step days where Objective-C was being repurposed for and adapted into, you know, what would eventually become OS X. And then you have the second wave, the second phase, which was macOS 10 development. And that's been where we were until maybe in the last couple of years, where you have community projects, especially I want to give a shout out to CocoaPods, which I think really makes all of this possible, that we have a packaging solution that allows developers to collaborate pretty much without any friction, that you can drop in dependencies and you can upgrade them and you can manage dependencies that have their own dependencies. So it becomes an ecosystem. You can do that easily with CocoaPods. And I think the tooling in that, and a lot of this coming over from the Ruby community, I think in large part Rails developers took an interest to iOS just as a you know, happenstance of history. And as a result, we've been blessed with some of the best you know, side effects, the best bits of the Ruby community being instilled in the Objective-C community, mainly tooling, this sort of pragmatic drive towards better solutions to things, and a lack of fear in getting our hands dirty. At least that's what I attribute to the Ruby community. So,
yeah, I completely agree. It's been great. I've never seen so much open source code in Objective-C.
Previously, or you mean currently?
Currently.
Yeah.
Like, all thanks to all.
Yeah. Before CocoaPods.
Thanks to CocoaPods.
Oh, yeah. Before CocoaPods, it was maybe, you know, there was a JSON library here and there. There was something that was just waiting around on a blog post somewhere created by a large company like, or, you know, an established company like Omni. But yeah, you didn't have these individual contributions. And now we have, I've lost track. There are probably over 1,500 CocoaPods at this point, which is just astounding.
Yeah, it's actually, it's almost like a bit of a smell for me now if I'm looking at an open source project and the README has like this long installation thing where it's like drag these files into your project or copy this project over, add this submodule, blah, blah, blah.
Right. Deeply suspicious of people that aren't using that.
Right. I just don't want to deal with that at this point.
Absolutely.
Yep. Podspec or bust.
Right.
I was hoping we could talk about the architecture of AF Networking 2 in more detail, and specifically the modularity. So previously, there was a fairly large chain of inheritance to get down to something like AF JSON request operation, but you've completely refactored AF Networking 2. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So the original architecture of AF Networking is as follows. So at the bottom of everything, the heart and soul of AF networking came down to AF URL connection operation. And the design of that class and the value proposition of that class is fundamental to AF networking. So it's NS URL connection. That's what used to be the highest level of abstraction for networking in Foundation. And it was a class that implemented the NS URL connection delegate methods. And also doing so as a subclass of NS operation, which gave you a lot of great side effects. So it gave you cancelability, it gave you scheduling, it gave you the ability to monitor state. And then because it was its own object, that it represented a request from start to finish and tracking that state and any data that's accumulated over that, the object itself, the operation, becomes a container, a vessel for all of the metadata associated with that and all of the data that's returned from the server. So that was sort of the base class. And of course, NS URL connection is compatible, you know, that handles HTTP requests, but it also handles file URLs and FTP, although I don't think I've ever seen it used for FTP. Either way, the level of abstraction or the, you know, the subclass built on top of that AF HTTP request operation was the class that specifically introduced the idea of HTTP. It's really the main part is that there's a distinction between success and failure. That a request can be successful, you know, not just that the request actually happened, but the request was either successful or failed based on its status code and its content type. So if it's a 200 status code, that's a success. And if it's what you asked for, so you expected JSON and you got JSON back, then yeah, that's a successful operation. So then the way that I took that a step further and said, you know, it's not just getting data back, it's getting fully formed objects back. So JSON, XML, images, property lists. And that's where you have that next level of the hierarchy. the AFJSON request operation, for instance. But of course, that's gone in AF Networking 2.0, and there are a couple reasons for that. The first of which is one out of necessity, and that's because AF Networking 2 is split between the NSURL connection based functionality and then the newer NSURL session-based functionality. And the split between those two things is interesting. So NSURL session, for anybody that's not as well-versed or hasn't checked that out yet, it's different than NSURL connection in a couple fundamental ways that actually end up being rather advantageous and kind of what we want as developers, but it's still a bit of an adjustment. So NSURL session, it gives you a per-session configuration. So instead of sharing the global, for instance, URL cache, set of URL protocols, cookie storage, credential storage, that sort of thing, it gives you the ability to say, for this session, I want to do this and that, and I have these policies set, and I want to store the cache in this particular way. And nothing else in the system will change that. But NSURL session itself doesn't actually do the networking itself like NSURL connection did, which means that you configure once and then you do requests on that session. And the vessel for doing those requests is NSURL session task. And there's upload, download, and data tasks. Those are the three concrete subclasses that represent the fundamental operations that you're going to do over a network in your application. So that the task model, that sort of inversion of responsibility compared to NSURL connection, made it impossible to adapt the same pattern as we did with AFURL connection operation. So we couldn't just have a common operation subclass and kind of swap out implementations. It was much more powerful to kind of pave over the expected behavior, pave the cow path, so to speak, of how you're supposed to use these classes. So to kind of bring it back, the reason why there's less insistence, less dependence on subclassing is that that unnecessarily couples functionality between classes. So we have these two independent silos of functionality. And the only way that we're going to be able to share mutual functionality, for instance, validating the response that you got back from the server, parsing that into a useful format, and all those other kind of things, those are going to be responsibilities that have to be owned by a separate and new entity. And that's where you get the idea of serializations.
Right. So if I'm understanding this correctly, now instead of using a specific operation subclass, we're creating an explicit serializer, handing it to the AFURL session? Or
you would hand it over to so there are a couple ways you can do it. The AFURL connection operation has a response serializer, which basically dictates how a response and data from a server is returned and processed. The same is true of an AFURL session manager, which itself manages the requests through tasks. And that response serializer is then used by all the different tasks. So those are the different ways that those are used. And actually, that provides a lot of flexibility in the way that you do things. So it used to be that if you wanted to change, for instance, the JSON reading options, like, for instance, to allow fragments, incomplete JSON objects to be serialized correctly, that was going to be a property on the request operation itself. However, with serializers, now you have the option to configure details about the process of translating a response and data from the server into something useful. Now you can do that all in one class. So a really great example of what that allows for is, for instance, there is a core image response serializer, which takes data from a server. It's a subclass of the regular image serializer, except you can define an array of core image filters to process it with. So the use case there is that, let's say you have image views that, let's say in a table view, and they're loading images from the server using the UIKit extensions in AF Networking. You can now specify a response serializer in this case, the core image serializer, and automatically have filters applied to your images as they're coming in. So if you wanted kind of a fancy film noir effect, you could put in a black and white core image filter as your serializer on that image view. And all of a sudden your app is transformed in a really cool way, just with, you know, a single line of code. But to bring it back to a more pragmatic kind of use case, like the fanciness of the core image thing is one thing. But actually, as I thought more about the problem, what I found is that, you know, it's not just limited to getting JSON or XML back. I mean, if we take this to its ultimate conclusion, really what the problem of networking is solving is getting data, you know, shuttling not just data, but information, and information within a context, within a semantic scope. And that's defined by the domain of your application. So instead of JSON, instead you could, for instance, create serializers that create instances of your own objects, create instances of NS-managed object or NS-managed object subclasses. So really what we have, what started as a point of necessity, a place of necessity that we needed to share this functionality of response validation and serialization between two disparate sort of architectures within AF Networking 2, what we got was something much better, which is the realization that there is a very, I would say even boring, a trivial kind of translation layer, a layer of business logic that exists in all applications. And by isolating that inside this idea of serializers, we're able to create applications that very nicely contain and you know, modularize that out, that responsibility, all those business concerns that are sort of can otherwise be littered around your application and reduce the clarity of what you're actually doing. Now this is a primary construct inside AF Networking, and I think it's quite powerful.
From like me as someone using the library, what's the upgrade path like moving from AF Networking 1 to AF Networking 2?
Sure. There is a migration guide available on the AF Networking repository, and that has a couple of kind of quick hits. This explanation of the, you know, a point-by-point explanation of where everything went. For instance, I think the biggest shock for AF Networking 1 users is that AF HTTP client, which was the epicenter of all functionality, and I'd argue it became sort of a god object, something that had too many responsibilities. That's all gone. That thing has been blown up. And now exists with, you know, corresponding classes both on the NSURL connection and NSURL session sides. And then its composite functionality, its ability to monitor for network reachability, that's now in its own class. And the whole thing about security, SSL pinning, being able to verify the identity and evaluate the trust of server certificates based on local public keys or bundled public keys and certificates, which is a great security feature. That's now its own class too. So actually a lot of functionality in AF Networking has been unmoored from the internal private implementation details. And that allows people to use just that if that's actually what they want.
You don't get like download stats or anything from CocoaPods, right? They haven't set that stuff up yet.
We've been working on something to track that, but of course, one of the brilliant things about CocoaPods is that it's actually just used, it's bootstrapped its whole infrastructure on top of GitHub. So unlike, for instance, RubyGems, which is its own service that's maintained as a web application, all of CocoaPods is just Git. So if you want to add your own CocoaPod to the project, you just, you know, do a pull request or commit to the specs repository. So that means that, you know, you can use CocoaPods without anything but GitHub, and everything just works. The downside to that, of course, is that GitHub isn't providing, it's not a reasonable expectation for them to do so, but there's no way to kind of track download statistics. That's something that I know Aloy and I were working on, but of course there are many things to do. So, but to answer the question you're getting at, no, I have no idea. How often it's been downloaded, but a good statistic to check is on the CocoaPods site, you can search, you know, uses AF Networking, and I think maybe 100 libraries kind of use AF Networking in some capacity as a dependency. So, you know, if there are 1,400, 1,500 libraries out there, CocoaPods, yeah, that represents a pretty significant portion.
Yeah.
And then in terms of overall usage, I've kind of predicted that it's tens of thousands of apps on the order of that in the App Store right now using AF networking, at least. There's unfortunately, it's licensed under the MIT license, so there's no need for attribution. You can just use it. So I love open source for that. However, there's one downside to that is that there's no incentive or legal structure in place to get those download any sense of who's using it or for what. Actually, I found out recently that AF networking was being used in certain Android applications, which is kind of interesting. Between people creating applications on top of like Xamarin or other Objective-C adoption layers, adapter layers, I guess, it was possible to use AF networking inside Android projects. So there are a couple dozen Android apps out there on the Play marketplace that using AF networking. Strangely, that was probably the biggest shock.
Yeah, that's bizarre. Switching gears a little bit, I think most people know that you also do the NS Hipster as well.
Yeah. NS Hipster, it's a weekly journal of the obscure parts of Objective-C and Cocoa.
Let's see, what was the first article? Why did you start NS Hipster, of all things?
Why did I start NS Hipster? Well,
NS Index Set, is that the first thing you did?
And this is a tip for anybody that's starting out anything, whether it's a blog or a podcast. First of all, throw away the first thing that you write. ditch the first episode. I think that's a tip I learned from Merlin Mann or somebody. There's an NS Hipster article that never saw the light of day. But then I started with just the first batch of four, and it highlighted, it's NS Index Set, NS Cache, NS Sort Descriptor, and NS Date Components, which are maybe the least sexy classes in Foundation, or some of them at least. And I saw them as being uniquely well designed within this context, and I wanted to highlight them in a way and elevate them in a way that they don't normally have the opportunity. Like NS Date Components by itself, it's just a container. The object itself is just a container that you specify basically how many weeks, days, months, units of time in a way that's then passed into a calendar object. So you can do date calculations in a very high level and, of course, calendar specific way and something that supports all the different kinds of ways to think about and to organize time across all the different localities. And it's this depth and completeness and the forethought that's put into the design of all these classes by Apple's engineers that is something that I think is often overlooked, or even worse, it's shunned. That people say this NS calendar thing is too difficult to use. Why can't we just do the Ruby thing of date, time.now plus 1.second? Right. The fact that that's not a one-liner in Objective-C, a lot of people might think is a shortcoming. I say, no. If you think that time is something as simple as, how many seconds since a reference point, then you're in for a world of hurt. Right. It's a very complex problem.
If you had to pick one of these, or even one that you haven't written, what do you think is your favorite little obscure library or framework?
Sure. My favorite article is probably the one on nil, the one on the nil null object, basically the concept of nothingness in Objective-C. All of the articles, I do one on bool too, and I bring it into these weird philosophical places, these conversations of truth and existence. And it becomes a real head scratcher in some places, because these are philosophically very challenging things to think about by themselves outside of a programming concept, but then applying it to something that you have to run on an iPhone, that's a different concern altogether. But in terms of, let's say, the most obscure APIs, I'm a really big fan of the linguistic APIs. I think that Foundation has the best, by far, the best implementation of string and linguistic APIs that exist in any standard library, and probably better than the sum of all third-party libraries for any language. So take any language, add the ecosystem, what people build around it, and it is still nothing compared to what Apple has done with their NS String class and all of the different string transformations, linguistic tagging, speech synthesis, which is sort of a separate concern. But I mean, the amount of information and capacity that those APIs have is just astonishing and makes it so nice to work with.
So, and then you have the NS Hipster book coming out. Do you want to plug that?
Sure. You can buy NS Hipster as a book. It's the website that you know and love, plus a couple new articles, like over a dozen articles, new essays written about some separate kind of concerns about API design and how to work within the community. So things that won't be on the website, but I think are important to know as somebody who is passionate about their craft and is developing software today. So the book's now available. You can check it out on Gumroad. I think it's just gumroad.com/NSHipster. We'll give you the link. And I've announced that with this week's, or I guess when this comes out, last week's article on Monday. And happy to say over 500 pre-sales. It's been remarkable how the community's rallied behind it. And I'm just humbled by how kind and generous people were being with it. So, I mean, NS Hipster has been a joy to write. It started out as a writing exercise to see if I could actually keep something up week to week. And it's become, it's great for it to have become such a valued resource and that I've been able to help and inform so many people. So it's a gift that, I get to keep writing for this. And, the book is kind of a nice extension of that. So thanks to everybody who's pre-ordered, and I'm really excited to get that out to you. It's the street date is November 12th.
Awesome. And so if people want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Twitter's probably the best. GitHub as well. Either way, I'm Matt, M-A-T-T-T, three T's on both of those services. And I'm usually pretty responsive. So any questions, concerns, pull requests, anything like that, get in touch.
Cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on.
Show notes for this episode will be available at learn.thoughtbot.com/buildphase/11.
If you want to get in touch, we're available via email, buildphase@thoughtbot.com, or on Twitter and app.net @buildphase. This episode was recorded and edited by Mike Manner and produced by Chad Pytel.